With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Welcome in to the Tighten Up Podcast on the A to Z Sports Podcast Network.
I'm Jack Gentry alongside Austin Huff. You can find us both on Twitter. I'm at Jack A. Gentry. He's at Austin Huff. We are the Tighten Up Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Tighten Up Pod. Follow us on Instagram. We're at Tighten Up Podcast. And as always, make sure you're following A to Z Sports on every social media platform. This is so number 214, the PK following the wrong Mike Vrabel of Sodes. That so title comes from Anthony Lehman on Twitter. And Sam, I don't know if you saw it, but there are, and this isn't just for the fake Mike Vrabel Twitter account out there, but there's another one that's a fake Rand Carthon Twitter account whose bio literally was the GM of the DMs. And he would tweet as, you know, as things would happen with the Titans, and people would take that as Rand Carthon's actual Twitter and retweet it, and people would believe it. And the same thing happened with Mike Vrabel's Twitter over the last week. You know, he's got an updated bio where it looks legit, but he's only got 500 followers. Obviously, Vrabel, his real account has many more than that. But PK followed this account, and as soon as he did, the fake Vrabel account tweeted out the caption. Well, first of all, it was a picture of PK following him, like the notification, along with the caption, "We've got peace in the Middle East coming up for you next." Pretty hilarious stuff right there from the Titans burner accounts. Keep up the good work out there. I don't know if you saw that, Sam, but that really riled me up a little.
Well, that Rand Carthon account is like does some damage. It has a weird, like it's got a very weird, large following. A lot of media people following that, I think, assuming it's the real Rand Carthon Twitter account. And so, yeah, that account as well, the Rand Carthon one, tweets vague things around important times of the year, like a hush emoji or a fire emoji or a stopwatch emoji, right when like free agency opens or the Titans make a big move. Always gets retweeted by somebody that I follow, and I just go, man, you got duped, and you probably don't even know that you got.
No, it's so funny, too, because it just keeps popping up. Usually, like, people, you know, are quick to point out that it's a fake account, and I feel like many people in the media especially have done that, but fans still see Rand Carthon, see the picture, see the bio, which now says, like, if you're reading this, it's too late. It's out of control, but I think it's so funny that these trolls are dominating Titans fans. Okay, we've got a great sode cooking up for you guys today. And if you can't tell already, Sam Phelan is in for Austin Huff. Austin Huff is out on vacation, which must be nice. 214 straight weeks for me, but who's counting? So Austin's out on vacation.
Where's Austin Huff on vacation?
He's down in Florida. He's in Naples, Florida. So if there are any cuppers in Naples, Florida, keep your eye out for a 5'7 to 5'8 man with a scraggly beard and two kids, because that's going to be Austin Huff down there. As punishment for Austin missing out on this week's episode, I encourage all tuppers, and Sam, you can do this as well. I'm going to do this. Bombard him with your mock drafts. Absolutely ruin his day. Blow his Twitter up account with your mock drafts. There's nothing he hates more in this world than mock drafts. So send Austin Huff at Austin Huff on Twitter your Titans mock drafts. And
I will be DMing Austin Huff. Punishment. Yeah, I will be DMing Austin Huff my mock drafts conducted on one of the many mock draft simulators out there. I will DM him a couple of them, intentionally being as wildly unrealistic as possible. and I will just send them and just be like, "Hey man, what do you think about this?" And we'll see if he picks up on the bit or not, or see if he sends me some sort of annoyed reply.
You'll get an angsty message back from Austin Huff. I guarantee you that much. Titans fans, send us more so titles. We've got one bun in the oven, but we're looking for more. So if you've got a so title that comes to mind over the next few days of the Titans draft, some new players, go ahead and shoot that our way. We'd be happy to read it. The line is short, too, to have your show title read. So get in while you can. Your homework this week, send Austin Huff your mock drafts. We've got a great show lined up, though. We're going to talk Titans draft stuff. Rand Carthon and Brian Callahan both were at the podium today. Sam was there for it all. We're going to talk about some nuggets that came out of that. Also, there is a member of the Texans brass, actually the owner's wife, who came out and said some interesting things about the Titans over the past 24 hours. We're going to get to her comments and our reaction from those comments a little bit later in the show. But it's going to be really fun. We'll close it out with our picks for the Titans' first draft pick, whether that's at 7, whether there's a trade back. We're going to give you our final predictions for what the Titans will do in the first round. But we're going to get to that in a minute. First, Sam's got a word from BetMGM.
Yep, BetMGM, they are the king of sportsbooks. Sign up with BetMGM using the code ATOZSports and receive up to $1,000 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, player props, and daily boosted odds specials. With BetMGM at your fingertips, every play, every game, every draft pick for the NFL draft here means more than ever. Find out why BetMGM is the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly and offer resources to help you make appropriate choices. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. 21 years of age or older to wager. Tennessee only. New customer offer. All promotions are subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. For first online real money wager only. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. For problem gambling support, call the Tennessee Red Line at 800-889-9789.
Crushed it, Sam. But hey, don't look for a check in the mail because there's not enough to go around. All right, with all that said, let's talk Titan.
I hear the train a-coming. It's rolling around the bend, and I ain't seen the sunshine since I don't know when. I'm stuck in Folsom Prison.
What is up, Flameheads? Welcome into the Titan Up Podcast. Today is April 24th, 2024. The draft is on Thursday. I am joined by the knowledgeable Titans reporter, Sam Phelan. He's got it all down. He's been on top of this draft stuff like nobody else has. So we're going to get to hear from him here. And Sam, let's just go ahead and dive right into it. You were over at the building today as Rand Carthon and Brian Callahan wrapped up their pre-draft press conference duties. And a couple interesting nuggets came out of there today. First off, I kind of want to get your opinion on this. We heard Carthon specifically, you know, and not even specifically, Callahan also joined in on this. But they started off talking about the depth there is at offensive line and at wide receiver in this draft. Did that change your opinion on what might happen at the 7th overall spot? Do you think they might wait a little bit to address one of those spots, or maybe wait even a little longer than we expect to address one of those positions? Because, hey, you're not going to be able to come out of the first round with two players. What do you take away from those comments that they made earlier today? Or earlier Tuesday, I should say.
Yeah, I mean, it's not the first time that we've heard this. This has kind of been the narrative that Brian Callahan and Rand have been spinning since I talked to them at the NFL Combine. They like offensive tackle depth. They trust Bill Callahan's evaluation of offensive tackles. And I think they believe they can get a good starting offensive tackle not in the first round. Maybe it seemed like a little bit of smoke and mirrors at first. The closer we get to the draft, the more I hear them talk about this. And I just think genuinely, overall, Brian Callahan is not much of a smoke and mirrors guy. He is a straight shooter type of fella. I believe that they believe this. And so does it change the way I think they will approach the first round and that 7th overall pick? No, because I have had this opinion, Jack, and maybe a controversial opinion to some. But I think the Titans are going to take a wide receiver at 7 if the right guy is there. I believe they are sitting there hoping Malik Nabers finds a way to make his way to 7th overall and that they would pull the trigger on him. Do I think that's realistic and likely? Spoiler alert. No, not necessarily. I think that they would need a lot to go right to do that. So not hard and fast that they are for sure going to take a wide receiver. You have to play the board. You have to see what happens with these four quarterbacks at the top of the draft. But I think they believe this. they kind of talked about wide receiver depth at the same time they talked about offensive line depth. And what they say is, look, this draft class for wide receivers stacks up pretty even to kind of what we've seen from receivers in the past. You've got some good high-end talent. In the later rounds of the draft, you've got some rotational role players, guys who can fill certain needs within your scheme, whatever you need them to accomplish there. But offensive tackle, deeper than usual. I've seen mock drafts that have up to 12 offensive tackles going off the board in the first round. I don't think that's very realistic, right? Maybe it's 6 to 8, but maybe there are those guys with first round grades available at 38. And Brian Callahan and Rand Carthon also referred to, hey, there's going to be starting offensive linemen drafted in rounds 2, 3, 4, 5. They could have dudes that are penciled in as day one starters, as a round 3 tackle, round 4 tackle, whatever it is. That kind of paints the picture of what I think their approach to this draft is going to be.
Do you think that, you know, them, you believe that they're going to wait to take a tackle, obviously, but do you believe that's
I believe they're willing to wait to take a tackle. Okay. Like, you know, I could still see a tackle coming off the board at 7, but I
only Joe Alt, right? Wouldn't everybody else kind of be a reach at 7 there?
Sure. Yeah. I don't know how they've got these guys ranked. I think they probably like J.C. Latham out of Alabama a lot, more than Titans fans probably do. Would they do something like that at 7? I don't know. I just published an article for A to Z Sports this afternoon that kind of laid out what I think is the nightmare scenario, the worst case scenario for the Titans. And so let me throw this out there for you, Jack. In a world where Caleb Williams goes number 1, Jaden Daniels goes number 2, one of Drake May or J.J. McCarthy comes off the board number 3 to the Patriots. In a world where that fourth quarterback, nobody trades up to come and get them with the Chargers, right? So Arizona takes, we'll say, Harrison. Mm-hmm. What if the Chargers take Joe Alt?
Yeah.
The Giants take their receiver and go with Malik Nabers? The Titans are then sitting at 7. No Joe Alt, no Malik Nabers, and quite possibly no trade partners. Like, I think it's very easy to mock and predict, oh, well, in that spot, you just trade down. It kind of ignores the fact that you need somebody who's willing to trade up. And if I'm the Raiders at 11 or the Broncos at 13, or I think Minnesota's at 12, I don't know, they're in some order around there. Why would you jump the New York Jets and the Chicago Bears and the Atlanta Falcons, who are picking 10, 9, and 8 respectively? Those teams aren't going to take a quarterback. I think you lose a lot of your leverage. And so what happens if the Titans are sitting in that spot at 7 without somebody knocking on their door to come and get that 7th overall pick?
Yeah, so, I mean, Roma Dunze would probably be, if you're going to sit and pick, it would be a Dunze probably, in my opinion. Now, you also could probably hope that there's a team back there, maybe in the teens, that really needs Dallas Turner. Because there's really not, you know, if those guys are off the board, the guys that you just mentioned are off the board, there's not another guy, because, you know, that drop off from the fourth quarterback to the fifth is pretty steep. I think everyone kind of agrees on whether it's, you know, Penix or Bo Nix. I have to work so hard to say Penix, too. It just rolls off the tongue if you say it quicker, like that other thing we're thinking about. But, you know, I think that Adunze would be the pick there, but I don't know if, like you said, the demand wouldn't be high, so you might not have an option to trade back. Now, you did say something that I found interesting. You said Malik Nabers at 6 to the Giants, and they need a receiver bad, right? Like, they've needed a receiver bad for a really long time. Like, since OBJ's heyday, they've needed a receiver badly.
Sure.
Do you remember, you were at the Combine, Sam, and I remember hearing reports and just people talking about it, that the Giants had buyer's remorse after giving Daniel Jones that big old contract a couple years ago. And so I did some digging, and the Giants have a potential out after that Daniel Jones, or after the 2024 season with Daniel Jones. Now, they'd have to eat $22 million in cap, but that's a whole lot better than having a $40 million cap hit in 2025, and then a $58 million cap hit in 2026. So while they do need a wide receiver, and the Giants are known to surprise in the draft, right? I mean, Daniel Jones was a massive surprise at the time. I think the Giants are in the market for a quarterback. So even if, you know, say McCarthy's still available at six, I think he's a New York Giant. Brian Daboll's had some bad luck up there with, you know, just his roster in general, some health as well. Obviously, the O-line needs a whole lot of work, but you've got a left tackle that you kind of believe in. And, you know, they'll probably wait on Evan Neal to kind of figure it out there, too. So I think that six is a prime position. It is one to really watch for a quarterback to go there. And that would be J.J. McCarthy or Drake May, the fourth quarterback that will probably not get taken if Arizona sits and picks Harrison and the Chargers sit and pick Alt. So I think that there's a realistic shot that Malik Nabers slips to the Titans at seven. And I actually think that it's so realistic that I went and put $50 on Malik Nabers to be the seventh overall pick in the draft at plus 700.
Hey now.
So I think that there's a shot. That's my only.
I mean, Titans I think that's great value, by the way. If we're looking at just kind of the value play, Joe Alt being minus money is crazy to me on some of these sports books. And I think the Titans are way more inclined to take wide receiver than maybe some national media would like to believe right now, or maybe even Vegas would like to believe. I don't disagree with your Giants take at all. I think they are one of those teams that are very much a question mark at quarterback right now. They could obviously very easily run it back with Daniel Jones. They could do that and grab a quarterback like J.J. McCarthy or Drake May, who they feel comfortable sitting for a year and trying to develop a little bit, but try and get that guy in waiting. The question for the Giants is, you know, where do they have these quarterbacks ranked? And if it's not the right quarterback that falls to them, let's say it is the guy that they have as their QB4. Is the QB4 on your board worth passing up potentially the wide receiver one on your board? Because there are a handful of teams that have Malik Nabers higher than Marvin Harrison Jr. That I know for sure. So that is the ultimate question, right? Like, are you forcing the need at quarterback enough where you're okay giving up a potential star wide receiver in the process? I'm not sure that they are, but that would not surprise me. It's funny how in a draft where the Titans do not need a quarterback, so much of what's available to them depends on what happens with these quarterbacks at the front of the draft. And honestly, even in the second round of the draft, like whether or not a Bo Nix or Michael Penix make it to 38 could potentially give you a draft partner in the beginning of the second round to add some picks. And I think that's something that the Titans would be open to. But you have to have somebody wanting that pick. And it's not very easy to get somebody to trade up once you're in the second round, unless it's for a quarterback.
Mm-hmm. That would be ideal if Bo Nix slipped to that 38th overall spot, because there would be a team wanting to jump up and get him. And you know Carthon's going to answer all those calls. So, yeah, you know, the Giants are, when the season finished and the draft order came out, I was pumped to be picking behind the Giants because it feels like they always go off schedule and they do something random and they do something unexpected. And usually they do something terrible with their first round draft pick. So we'll see how that plays out at six overall. But man, that 4-5-6 run right there. If there are no trades, I feel pretty good about coming away with Malik Nabers. But
well, it's going to be on edge. Trades or no trades, it's going to be so on edge, man, because we are going to be sitting there waiting for that Adam Schefter notification. You and I will be live for the draft, and I'm sure everybody's kind of going to be like, all right, commissioner's here, and Jaden Daniels is the pick. And then as soon as the Patriots get up there at number three, because there's rumors the Patriots could trade out a number three.
Oh, yeah.
Like I think they're taking a quarterback. I'm not sure I'd buy all that when all is said and done. I think Robert Kraft does not want to go another year with incompetence under center and needs to give the fan base something to get a little excited about. But as soon as that Jaden Daniels card is turned in at number two, it's like, okay, draft starting. Here we go. And it's going to be a fun, like, 45 minutes that ensue after that.
And I wonder if it's going to be a situation where the Patriots feel like, you know what, let's go ahead and take Harrison at three, because we can circle back in the second round and grab Nix. So if they really like Nix and they sit there and take Harrison, then it gets really interesting, right? Because that opens up the door for the Cardinals.
I think so. I don't think that's impossible, but I think if a team like the Patriots were to do that, I'm not sure they can wait until the second round. I think that's a really dangerous game to play. It's something that I tried to tell Titans fans that were advocating a few weeks back for, hey, trade back and just take Brock Bowers. Like, do easy. You know, you can sign, like, plan to do that all you want, but if Brock Bowers doesn't get to you, then what? Now you're sitting there at 15 without the player that you were targeting. And so I think that's a really, really dangerous game for the Patriots to hold trigger on Marvin Harrison Jr. and then just hope one of the top six quarterbacks falls into their lap. You might see them need to get aggressive and trade back into the first, which is not cheap.
Mm-mm. Nope, it's not. Okay, back to the press conference. Oh, by the way, draft show, you got there. Shameless plug. Let's go ahead and do this. Sam, Lucas Panzeca, and I will be doing the A to Z Sports draft show, Titans draft show. This week, you're going to want to tune in on Thursday and Friday. We're going to go live before the picks. We're going to talk about them after the picks. It's going to be really fun. It's always really fun. Sam, we did it together last year, and it was an absolute blast with plenty of surprises across the board. So don't, if you're sitting at home on Thursday and Friday, go ahead, tune into A to Z Sports Titans draft show. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Put the draft on your TV. Draft on TV, pull out the laptop. Pull our commentary up, and then have your phone out for all the Schefter notifications while he spoils the draft and ruins everybody's fun like the jerk he is.
We'll go through the emotions together because I know that there will be a lot of those, as there were last year. Okay, moving on. Rand Carthon and Callahan also...
Can I take a timeout real quick just to address that second further? Is this just me that feels like the draft has been ruined by your Adam Schefters of the Ian Rappaports of the world, like the NBA draft, and Shams and Woj are three picks ahead of the podium and telling you who's coming off the board? It ruins the viewing experience significantly. And it's super difficult in our position, Jack, because I want to sit there and be surprised
so
as
do
the
I.
picks
yes.
get read. And yet we have a show to run and we have a show to talk about. And we need to get updates as quickly as possible so that we can start, talking about them on the show. So I don't know how everybody else feels about this, but this is a longstanding pet peeve of mine that really has existed for maybe 5 or 6 years now, where watching the draft and just like engaging on Twitter with people and being like, ooh, who are we going to get, is impossible because the pick's going to be spoiled every which way. Stinks.
No, it does stink. And the draft, as well as football games, by the way, because those get spoiled as well by, you know, some people that are in the box and everything. I'll admit to something that I don't think I've admitted to before, but I have to mute my own uncle Jim Wyatt on game days for the Titans because I don't want to know what's coming. You know, I want to be surprised. I still want to go through the emotions, good and bad. But yeah, no, you're totally right. It does stink having it all online before it happens on my TV. And, you know, I'm on I have direct TV stream, so there's a bit of a delay already. But it, like, the draft is one of those events where you don't close your phone. Like, you're constantly scrolling and seeing, you know, and whether it's making fun of another team's picks.
Gotta fire off takes, man.
Yeah. I mean, it's take central. So you want to have that phone available, but you can't dodge the Schefter bombs. I would advise muting him. I know that that's...
Mute
I'm probably
Adam
not
Schefter
even
on draft night. You heard it here first from the Titan Up podcast.
So, so we'll see you guys in the chat. I'm sure y'all will spoil it for us as well. Hey, you know what? Post the Pred score on Friday, too. I'm going to need some help. I'm going to be going crazy not being able to watch that Pred game. But, okay, back to it. Blue players, Sam. Blue players was a word that I had never heard before. And Rand Carthon got up there and defined it today as blue player being, you know, a player that they can take in the draft that is an immediate day one starter. You plug him in the lineup, he starts for you. What did you think about, you know, Rand Carthon's thoughts on blue players in this draft?
Yeah, I asked Rand that question because it's something that he used to refer to Peter Skoronski back when they drafted him last year, and we never really got full clarity. I think I always associated it as a blue chip player. Mm-hmm. Slightly different thing here, not a blue chip player, just a blue player. And I'm sure different teams have different ways of marking these players with dots and stars and highlights or whatever, and the Titans label them as blue players. And these are essentially the guys that Rand Carthon believes and their scouts believe and head coach Brian Callahan believes are going to be impact day one starters for this team. Essentially, your can't miss or your high floor prospect would be labeled as a blue player. Somebody that the Titans know is going to fill a need on their roster. So that Peter Skoronski was one of them last year, and you saw that. Obviously, it was at left guard and not at left tackle, like many Titans fans would have hoped, but the Titans had a vision immediately for, hey, this Skoronski kid, 17-game starter, if he's healthy and you just stick him and let him grow as he's at the position, and all will be fine. And so with that definition, I think the Titans kind of do have a premium on players that can impact them immediately. Obviously, the guy that you take at 7th overall is going to be somebody who you hope starts for you as a rookie. Yeah. Like, you're not going to take a wide receiver at 7th overall or a left tackle
put him on the shelf.
Overall, put him on the shelf and be like, well, hopefully he can develop and be better next year. But I think that's a philosophy that's going to carry over into the second, fourth, third round if they do get into the third round somehow with a trade back. Look at the rest of the offseason, Jack, and the moves that the Titans have made. It's been moves that have been made kind of with an approach of, hey, let's go ahead and win now. Let's go ahead and get L'Jarius Sneed. Let's go ahead and get Calvin Ridley. Let's spend the money on all of these different needs and try and build what's a relatively competitive team immediately. I think the Titans have done that and done a pretty good job of filling a lot of these holes where they're going to be a lot more competitive, and maybe they're 3 to 4 players away. And they're looking for those 3 to 4 players here in this draft. So I think if there was a choice, and let's say it's a second-round offensive tackle, and you're looking at somebody with a really high ceiling, could potentially, like, all the physical tools, could potentially be a future All-Pro, or a guy that you just think is a little bit more polished and ready to roll on day one, I'm inclined to believe Tennessee is looking at the guy that they think can play for them in 2024.
I agree. And, you know, Carthon actually, you know, said there's blue players littered throughout the rounds in the draft. I mean, he brought up Antoine Bethea, who was a Colts safety that was drafted in the 7th round that started on day one. So I thought that was pretty cool that, you know, they've already got guys they believe can jump in and start. Because, look, the Titans probably need a safety. They definitely need an inside linebacker. They need help on the defensive line, a wide receiver, offensive line help. Like, there's plenty of needs here. So the fact that they're going in and highlighting these blue players, you know, up in, you know, 5th, 6th round guys, that's encouraging to me. That also tells me, like you just said, that the plan isn't to rebuild and reload. It's to get this thing going now, to start the car. And I do believe that they're going to do that with their draft picks. And, you know, it makes me think that, well, you know, I'll phrase it this way, because a lot of people prefer to draft the best player available. And I do think that's a great strategy, right? Why take a guy that you need that might be way less talented than an available player just because you have a hole at left guard, right? Like, that would make no sense. But I do think that Carthon's going to do the right job of drafting the best player at a position of need throughout the draft and fill some of those holes that the Titans are missing desperately right now in day 2 and day 3. What do you think?
Yeah, it's an interesting thing that he actually gave a little bit of insight on today during the press conference, was that this Titans big board is built horizontally and vertically, as Rand described it. Vertically, you have your general player grade, your evaluation. They've looked at the tape, they've looked at the measurables. Here is how they grade a certain player. Now, as these players are sorted vertically by grade, horizontally, you have qualifiers that potentially separate players that are similar in grade. Maybe two guys have the same grade, or one is one step below the other. And as you mentioned, we've got a position of need here, or we've got a blue player here. We've got a guy who's more ready to start on day one. These are the different qualifiers that would then separate a guy with a similar grade to those around him. Kind of a very, like, two-dimensional to three-dimensional way of building a draft board that I'm very interested in seeing how it translates in specifically in those middle rounds. Like, I look at rounds 4 and 5 as incredibly fascinating rounds to see which direction the Titans go with those picks.
That's your catch-up round, in my opinion. That's where you really make up ground on the other teams in the division by hitting on guys in the fourth and fifth round while other teams swing and miss on project players. So if you can find a guy that's ready to contribute immediately there, you're doing yourself a big favor. And listening to Carthon talk about his big board, by the way, I mean, I have complete trust in his plan. I have complete trust in this team's vision in the draft. And it's never been this way, where we get a really inside, you know, inside look on what this board looks like and how they grade certain players. Like, I really love their process right now.
I do too. I'm a big fan of it. And maybe it's, you know, recency bias. Maybe it's drinking the Kool-Aid a little bit. I'll say Rand is a master politician in many ways. Like, he knows how to talk to people. He knows how to win people over. But him and Brian Callahan both, whenever they step to the podium, I'm usually buying what they're selling. It gives me a lot of confidence that they know what they're talking about. And maybe I'll be eating crow here in 48 hours when they do a pick on Thursday night that I just do not support, and I'll have to bash them a little bit on the A to Z Sports Draft Show. But I don't necessarily think that that's going to happen. Like, I feel like they, like you said, they've got a very clear plan, a quiet confidence about this regime and about where they're taking this draft and how they're going to be able to fill out their roster. And that has to give fans, I think, a lot of excitement for what's to come in the draft and then in the season.
And, you know, another part of the big board that we haven't discussed yet that I want to get into is the character concerns. You know, Titans are very familiar with these type of players. After Isaiah Wilson, you know, Vic Beasley wasn't a draft pick, but he was a guy that I feel like if the Titans had done a little more homework on, they would have realized, you know, wasn't all that interested in playing football. But Rand Carthon's on top of this, and so is Brian Callahan. He says they've already cut some guys from the board because of potential character issues. And that's why he said, you know, these in-person meetings are so important, because you can see that you can watch the player on tape, but until you really get him in person, get him in the building, you don't really know what kind of person he is. And that's clearly a priority for them. But do you think there's any names that you might have that you believe the Titans might have already X'd out because of some of these character concerns?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not gonna drop a name because I obviously don't know for certain.
This is all speculation. This is all speculation. This is nothing you know or don't know. I mean,
there are some interesting things, right? Like, I'll remind people that the Titans had Tavondre Sweat, the Texas defensive tackle, in their building the day after he was arrested for DWI. It came out. Everybody said, "How does this affect Tavondre Sweat's draft stock?" Yada yada yada. Posted bail, took a flight to Nashville, met with the Titans the next morning. They have been very committed, and I don't believe Tavondre Sweat has been crossed off of their board, but they've been very committed to finding the answers behind some of these guys that have off-the-field issues, behavioral concerns, character concerns. I know there's been a lot of stuff out there about a guy like Malik Nabers, potentially his attitude and how he is off of the football field. So I'm not sure for certain who this guy is, but like you said, they're proactive in this process, making sure that they identify this, ask questions, get somebody in a room and figure out, is this going to be a problem in the NFL? It was funny. He was also asked about money and does having money potentially affect, like, how do you know how a guy's going to behave once he gets money? And I think Brian Callahan had a pretty good line of saying, well, I think money just makes you more of who you are. So this is all this new Titans culture. This is what they are putting at the very top of their priority list, is the player that is behind, the person that is behind every player. And so if there potentially is Malik Nabers on the board when the Titans come up in the first round and they pass on him, if there is a guy that jumps off the page to you as a Titans fan as being, oh, that clearly fits every need, and they pass on him, there might be something behind the scenes that this team just doesn't love and they want to steer clear away of.
But they're very upfront about having done their due diligence from a personality standpoint.
Absolutely.
Right? Okay. Oh, so yeah. I don't have to worry about them taking any red flags.
No, like, they, right, there might be a guy that has red flags that they draft. And I feel confident, I think Titans fans should feel confident, that if they do that, they've deemed it a non-issue. They've identified the character of this player as a non-issue. Mm-hmm. Rand Carthon talked about when he was in college, his scholarship stipend payout, whatever, was $880 every 2 weeks, and he handled that horribly. So you have to understand that these are 19, 20, 21-year-old kids, and not every decision they make is going to be always perfect to the eyes of older people in the world and people who don't have that kind of money. But give them a little bit of grace. Understand that the Titans believe it's not a factor. And we've seen them, as much as you want to bring up somebody like Isaiah Wilson, and fair enough, like all the red flags that Jeffrey Simmons had off the football field that surrounded him, the Titans identified that as a non-issue. He said, I won't let you guys down on and off the field. It was in his call with John Robinson on the phone saying, on and off the field, I won't let you guys down. And he hasn't. And it's been a really, really great relationship on both ends for Jeffrey Simmons and the Titans.
Rand Carthon, $880 stipend. Sam, me and you both know. We both know that that doesn't last more than a weekend with Buck
Rising.
Every
2 months,
too. In Bloomington.
Every 2 months, Rand Carthon's getting $880. So he was burning through that pretty quick down there in Bloomington.
That's Buck Rising's friend group's. That's their tab from Saturday night.
No bottle service with $880.
All right. On to our last segment of this podcast, Sam. It's been great chatting with you. We've got some business to handle, okay?
I knew this would get you fired up. I texted this to you knowing that this was going to get your blood boiling a little bit, so.
Yeah. Well, you were right, because it did. There's been some chatter coming out of Houston. By the way, their new uniforms stink on ice. They stink on ice. I hate them. They're trying so desperately to get that baby blue back that they're dropping quality. I mean, they're hurting themselves here. Just give up the battle. You've already lost.
The H-Town black jersey with baby blue, it doesn't work for me. If you're going to do black and baby blue, lean all the way into the black and baby blue. Trying to throw in that dark red in the mix doesn't work. I'll say I think the red helmets are kind of nasty. I love those nice red helmets with like the bull horns coming out of the top. I'll give them big props for that. I think they cleaned up the regular jerseys. I have forever said the Texans jerseys stink. And let me be clear. I am, as you know, most people who follow my work would know, I am a Chicago Bears fan. I am not a Tennessee Titans fan. Was not born in the Tennessee area. So there is no bias when I say this, but I have always felt like the Houston Texans feel like an unreal organization, like not an actual NFL football team. Their branding, their uniforms, just kind of the look of all things Texans feel very like Division II college or like AAF or UFL.
It's getting like, XFL, isn't it?
Yeah, it's hard for me to take the Texans seriously. When I see Super Bowl champion and like a logo next to it, I see a lot of NFL logos and I'm like, oh yeah, that makes sense. These are the suit. But like, yeah, I have a hard time seeing the Texans hosting any sort of Super Bowl parade because they're just a fake organization to me. So I do want to clarify that because I think this is just another iteration of the Texans being hopelessly irrelevant and like having subpar branding. They change the entire thing. Stop being the Texans. I think it's horrible.
Yeah, that's great advice. Look, we're just trying to help them, you know? We want them to get up to a level where we feel like we're fighting on an even playing field. But we're not. They're little brother right now, which makes these comments from Cal McNair's wife so ridiculous. You know what? Cal McNair's wife, Hannah McNair, went on a radio show this week, and she decided to take a shot at the Titans. And instead of me telling you guys about it, we're going to go ahead and play the audio here.
Are you ready to play the Titans again? I know you kind of enjoyed that sweep last year. You got that marked on the calendar? Is that
you know what's so
schedule?
Funny is I was seeing some articles about Hannah salty about them wearing the uniforms. Who started that? Who exactly. started it wearing it against us? And then if anybody was at that game, their in-house PA mm-hmm. was instigating it. Mm-hmm. It was unbelievable, but mm-hmm. also wonderful because we finished the story. Okay?
Yeah. Exactly.
So, she went.
I mean, who's salty here?
Yeah, that's what I don't get. I kind of like that. Is that going to be something that maybe we get a little bit of healthy rivalry where, you know.
Rivalry is good here. For the league.
It's here, right?
Yeah, it's good for the
league. And the Titans are the top rival. It seems like it kind of moves. Right now, is that our top rival?
Well, first they need to beat us.
Oh, okay.
Oh,
so it's
wow.
not a rivalry yet.
Oh,
okay.
Wow.
So we got to go.
That's
we
how you
go.
Do it.
So
right.
Cool. It's okay.
All right, Sam. I'm not liking this. I'm not liking this at all. Where has she been, by the way? Because the Texans.
This was
are
the
two
first
years
I've
removed.
Heard of a Hannah McNair, by the way.
Yes, I agree. Cal McNair's wife. But the Texans are 2 years removed from fans yeah. showing up at Energy Stadium with brown paper bags on their heads. So where she gets off with this confidence is beyond me. I mean, you're talking about the Titans have to beat them first. Look, I totally understand. Texans have won the last three, okay? They've had our number recently. C.J. Stroud looks great. They won a division title last year. Probably should have won a playoff game. But this rivalry, the Titans are up 23-21 in this rivalry all time. And in the last 10 games, it's split 5-5. So the Titans have to beat us first. I mean, just feels like she's either got, you know, memory issues or she just hasn't been paying attention. Maybe this was an attention-grabbing thing. Maybe she needs some attention. How did these comments come off to you?
Yeah, so I will say, like, obviously the uniform debacle last year was just that. It was a debacle on the Titans' part. I mean, it like, sick uniforms. Great. I love
winning
them. And I like that they're bringing them back this year. I think those are throwbacks that are super, super dope. Wear those against the Carolina Panthers. Wear them in a game that you're going to win that football game. And you set yourself up for this exact scenario where you get clowned, where you lose to the Texans wearing the Houston throwbacks. It's a tough look. It's not the best. Mm-hmm. So I will say, bad look for the Titans. I understand why the city of Houston is upset by this. I think they take it far too personally. Like, lean into the culture of your new organization. Lean right. into the Texans and try to let go of the team that is not your team anymore. Like, who cares if the Warren Moon Oilers belong to you or belong to Tennessee or where he is celebrating and wearing these throwbacks. Like, celebrate the Houston Texans as you know them. Those are my full thoughts on that whole uniform debacle. And while it looks horrible for the Titans, I think you are absolutely on point with your comments about, hey, they got to beat us. Like, my least favorite, potentially my number one, and please excuse the train that is, you know, going absolutely ballistic behind me right now. I don't know if you can hear it or not.
I can't. You got a good mic.
Okay, fantastic, because this, it gets quite loud, and I always get worried when I make content. But there is nothing more irritating to me in sports than fans, ownership, whoever, that seem to anoint themselves prematurely, that seem to have this feeling of like...
Right. Act like you've been there before.
Well, and you understand that you're still the blank. Like, that is a phrase that I feel like I say all the time about a number of different franchises. It's quite honestly how I feel, and Jack, you'll agree with me here, about the University of Tennessee.
Uh-oh, Sam.
I know.
We've got to pander. This is a big portion of our listenership.
Listen, it like, and I don't have the same college football roots that so many people in the SEC do, and I get that. But like, there is this feeling so often that I'm listening to people anoint themselves and pretend like they're getting like robbed all the time, and everything is super personal, or they're hyping up their next quarterback to be like the second coming of Christ, and I'm just like, you realize you're still Tennessee, Houston Texans. You realize you're still the Houston Texans. You're that same franchise that just had guys with paper bags on their heads 2 years ago, and you were the laughingstock of the AFC South, who had the Jacksonville Jaguars, and you somehow helped the Jacksonville Jaguars become not a laughingstock by being even worse. And you're the same organization that had the Bill O'Brien debacle, that traded DeAndre Hopkins and then fired Bill O'Brien like immediately after making him the general manager because things were that much on fire. Like, win something, do something, have some consistency
exactly
in the division before you crown yourself.
So if this was coming from the Colts, right, you have to take it. You have to eat it because they've got a Super Bowl. The Texans have never won a divisional round matchup.
The Colts historically have owned the Titans. Like, the sure. Colts were a bully to the Titans. So regardless of what happens recently, if the Colts want to talk smack, the Colts are in a position to talk smack. But, like, the Jaguars and the Texans, two teams who I think are a joke to most other NFL fan bases, just overall as far as branding, as far as their fan base is concerned, as far as their history, like, you really have to do more for me. And, like, look how that went for the Jaguars. Look how the Jaguars, who won a division title and then won a playoff game and were saying, hey, Kings of the South right here, immediately got shoved back into third place in the South the next season. Like, not so fast there, buddy.
So I'm glad you brought up, like, I'm glad we're on the Colts Titans rivalry topic, because the Titans fans can't stand the Colts. I mean, there's some Peyton Manning beef there as well, because he went to Tennessee, then he dominated the Titans, and some Tennessee fans are Colts fans, but it doesn't make sense why they still are. But anyways, so the reason why that rivalry sucked, and it's a lot like the Preds Red Wings early, is because every time those two teams squared off, it felt like the Titans always lost. It felt like the Preds always lost to the Red Wings. But with when it comes to the Texans, like, they won. The Titans won 11 of the first 13 meetings between those two teams. They absolutely stomped them in the beginning stages of the Texans franchise. And they have to still hold some of that. Like, they still have to feel some of that pain. Because just like Titans fans are with the Colts, like, I mean, you want to beat them so badly because you remember all of the pain they caused you when the Titans were good. They needed one more win. They needed to get past the Colts. They couldn't do it. And that's what the Titans were for the Texans early on.
Yeah.
So I do think that there's some of that there. I love your point about wearing the throwbacks against the beatable teams. That's what you do. You buy some time. You wear it against the Bozos. You wear it against the Patriots. You wear it against the Bears. You wear it against some of the low, the bottom of the barrel teams in the NFL. And you wait for the Texans to rejoin the basement, because they will. They will join it. They will rejoin it. And then you throw them on when you play the Texans when they're bad. And you rub it in their face and you beat them by 21. That's what you do. That is how you should work the uniform.
Like, the uniforms are coming back this year, and I'm, like, far less excited for them because I'm going to be like, ah. Remember when they – I mean, they did beat the Falcons in throwbacks. That was fun for Will Levis.
Yes. Oh, so much fun. It's the most fun I've had in years.
But then, like, you quit while you're ahead there and have the throwbacks be like, hey, remember when Will Levis threw four touchdowns in the throwback Oilers uniforms? No, now everybody's going to say it. Remember when you lost to Houston wearing the throwback? Not great.
It should be a team option to wear them for the second game, right? Like,
yeah. Look, I think the AFC South as a whole, to kind of put a ribbon on this thing, super fun division right now, because this rivalry kind of exists four ways. I think there's a major power struggle where the Colts have the history of being the king of this division. The Titans have the most recent consistent success of any of the teams in this division. The Jaguars were the prince who was promised in this division, and the Texans are the ones who look like they might be stealing the throne.
The Jaguars were like King Joffrey in Game of Thrones. he was running the show just for a second.
Yeah.
Just for a brief moment, and then he got killed.
But now you're starting to see four teams who are all with young quarterbacks that they believe are the future of their organization, building to try and be competitive in a really unique power struggle that I think creates fun divisional rivalry. And if you're not a team that has a franchise that has a historic rivalry, if you're not Bears-Packers, if you're not Steelers-Ravens, if you're not one of these older, long-lasting rivalries, typically your biggest rival is you against whoever's at the top of your division, and you keep trying to throw punches their way. With how much the AFC South has kind of cycled over the last 4 to 5 years with a revolving door, like, it's been fun to see these teams continue to throw punches at each other. And I think now the question is, you've got four teams that all believe they have the right coach, four teams that all believe they have the right quarterback, four teams that are trying to build for the future. The Texans probably have the leg up in 2024, but who is the team that becomes a perennial contender and can kind of wear that crown for a little bit longer?
The rivalry hatred, like you said, is kind of almost balanced out because each team has kind of had a turn at the top lately.
Yeah. All right.
Before we get out of here, I should say, final pick, final decision, decision time, Sam. The Titans are on the clock at 7. What's their move?
Yeah, so this sucks. And, you know, Uncle Jim Wyatt came to me and said, Sam, need your pick for the mock draft roundup.
I gave him a bad one.
And I went with Joe Alt. And I was kind of trying to find every reason not to go with Joe Alt because it's boring and everybody's mocking Joe Alt to the Titans. I sort of disagree with your point here, Jack, because I believe Malik Nabers is less likely to fall to 7 than Joe Alt is. I look at the Chargers at number 5 right there as being the team that could potentially trade out of their spot. Maybe other teams get wind that the Giants at 6 are looking at that fourth quarterback. Jim Harbaugh wants offensive line, but doesn't want to necessarily take one at 5. I think another quarterback goes at 5. Malik Nabers goes at 6 to the Giants, and Alt just kind of perfectly falls in the Titans' lap. So it's me more trying to play the situation of who I realistically think will be there, and I have to say Joe Alt.
When Jim asked me, I felt like that Alt and Nabers would both be off the board. And I gave him an answer that the Titans are going to trade back and grab J.C. Latham. And I'm glad to hear you're high on him. I'm glad to hear you think that that's a possibility here.
I had my most recent mock draft, I had that exact situation. The Titans taking J.C. Latham at 14 after trading back. So I do think that that is a possibility. And he is a guy who's plug and play. The question is it right tackle or left tackle?
Mm-hmm. So, you know, I've changed my opinion since I gave my answer to Jim. And I think that there's going to be the three quarterbacks that go 1, 2, 3. Harrison goes 4th to the Cardinals. Alt goes 5th to the Chargers. And the Giants take J.J. McCarthy at 6, leaving the Titans with Malik Nabers. I think it's going to be Malik Nabers. Right. And I think that that would be a great day for Nash.
Well, $50 says so on your end. I know. Jack,
I've got a lot of props out on the board right now.
Yeah, Jack, real quick before we head out of here, I did want to get to this real quick because you asked me to cook up something that I thought was going to happen in this draft that maybe not a lot of people are talking about right now.
Okay.
So here's my two bold takes based on some of the information I've gathered for what's going to happen. Actually, I'll go ahead and I'll give you three. 6 quarterbacks are all going in the first round.
Wow.
I think we might see Michael Penix go off the board even before the 20s, somewhere in the teens. You might see Michael Penix come, and then Bo Nix. Somebody's going to trade back into the first round and try and get that 5th year. I'll say 6 quarterbacks going round 1. First defensive player off the board, Byron Murphy out of Texas in an upset top 10 pick. Not Jared Verse, not Dallas Turner. It's going to be Byron Murphy. And then my third one, my guy, and I maybe I'm off base here, Patrick Paul goes in the first round.
Oh, really?
Someone's going to pull the trigger.
He's one of my props, too.
Someone's going to pull the trigger on the back end of the 20s and go get themselves a 6'7", 37-inch arm left tackle in Patrick Paul.
Plus 600 to go in the first round. I got a little piece of that action, too.
I like it. So those are my three picks. We'll see how accurate I am. I'm trying to go a little bolder and find something that's not being discussed heavily right now.
I like that. I like those predictions. We'll have to keep track of them for the next time you come on.
No, you and I will track them live on the
draft. Yeah, that's true. That's true. Okay, before we get out of here, this is usually where Austin would ask me if I have something for the road, and I do. Nashville Cats, home opener this Saturday. The Cats are back in town. I'm so excited. I got to go check out a game. Jeff Fisher is, I believe, the head man in charge, not the head coach, but like he's running the show over there. He's GM. He's the Jackie whatever. Moon of the Cats, essentially. So I'm excited to go over there and watch a game at some point. Can't make it on Saturday, but the Cats are back and it's awesome. They've got the best logo in all of sports. I'm excited to have them back. It's going to be real fun to go over there and watch a game. All right.
Shout out to me, Cats legend, almost.
Cats legend. Yeah, you tried out for him. How's the quarterback situation looking?
Yeah, pretty good, seeing as I didn't make the team. So
yeah, that's awesome news.
They have to be studs if I didn't make it.
Good point, good point. I mean, you got the prototypical build, man. I'm surprised. Okay, well, that's about it for us. Before we get out of here, a reminder to follow the Tighten Up Podcast on Instagram, at Tighten Up Podcast. Follow us on Twitter, at Tighten Up Pod. Follow my guy Sam Phelan. Sam, I forgot to look up your Twitter handle before the show. Go ahead and drop it for me.
Yeah, just Sam_Phelan, just the name. Last name there is Phalen. So Sam_Phelan on Twitter. Instagram is just the first and last name as well.
Beautiful. Follow Sam Phelan on Instagram and Twitter. Follow me. I'm at Jack A. Gentry on Twitter. And, of course, follow A to Z Sports on every social media platform. This weekend's going to be popping with content, man. If you're not subscribed to the YouTube channel, do that. Don't forget to watch Sam and I, along with Lucas Panzica, 104.5 The Zone, on the A to Z Sports Titans Draft Show this weekend. It's going to be so much fun, Sam. I can't wait. We're almost there. All right, with all that being said, until next time,
Tighten up.
They're the Tennessee Titans. They're the Tennessee Titans. They'll keep